First off, Elliot Friedman, to kick off today's podcast, I would like to thank David Amber for stepping in last week. Yeah, that's I'm hearing some footsteps. Did a fantastic job. He's an outstanding broadcaster, so I needed to get back to this microphone as quickly as possible so I didn't get big-footed by David Amber, because he was outstanding. So thank you, David, for stepping in last week.
Like I said, your job was not in jeopardy.
You know what? We're all day-to-day.
That's the old line.
We're all day-to-day. We're all game-time decisions.
We are all game-time decisions.
In this industry. Okay, yes. Secondly, to kick off this podcast, I want to frame this perfectly. I want to set this up so it has a gravity. I want to frame it like I'm a professional broadcaster that teases enough in the intro that lets the audience know that something significant is going to happen after I frame this one very specific topic. I better do this well. Elliot, Ottawa.
Wow. I mean, it's the biggest story in the league as we tape this on Thursday morning. There's no question about that. And, you know, the situation with the players and Hoffman and the accusations against his fiance. Yep. Here's the thing. He has maintained the innocence of his fiance, and his agency has come out, Octagon, to say that there's a lot more going on here. What I can tell you about the situation is it was definitely a factor during the year in the room. Whether or not she did it, the players believed it was going on.
Not just the players, but we've seen a lot of the spouses come out publicly
and
comment on it. And what's remarkable about that, and a number of people have picked up and noted this, in a league where everybody goes out of their way, you know, does circles around themselves as to not incite controversy at all, to come out almost right away and comment and support the Carlson side of the story is remarkable.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that's tough for me about this story is, Jeff, is that I believe that in some ways, when you agree to become a pro athlete or a coach or an executive or even a media member, you are accepting that a good portion of your life is now public. And your mistakes are public, your good days are public, your bad days are public, and there's an acceptance of that, that people are going to see a good part of you in public and they're going to demand to see a big part of you in public. Just because you're a spouse or a girlfriend or whatever your relationship is, I don't necessarily think you sign up for that. There's a certain level of acceptance, but you don't necessarily sign up for it. I believe the line is different, and I find it very uncomfortable to report on this stuff because nothing's been proven. But the bottom line is, from a hockey point of view, it is very clear that the other players in the Ottawa Senators believe this story to be true, and it had a huge effect in their room. I believe that on Wednesday, the Senators were telling people that Mike Hoffman was going to be traded by 5 Eastern Wednesday. And I think that it was very hard to do because, one, his value has cratered. And secondly, as one GM told me, this is not a trade you can make now without calling your captain or your leadership group, telling them we need to know what your significant others think. Like, if we bring this here, are you going to be able to handle it? Are we going to be able to handle it?
Well, and that becomes one of the huge questions here. When, you know, this entire situation and Mike Hoffman and his fiance are perceived as being radioactive around the NHL, where once upon a time, and there were teams, and St. Louis comes to mind right away, that were interested in bringing in Mike Hoffman. A, to your point, the price has gone way down.
Yeah.
But B, and again, nothing has been proven. These are all still in the court of, you know, law, allegations, but there are two different standards. There's the standard in the court, and then there's the standard in society. I mean, he's perceived as someone that comes along with an amount of distracting baggage that will negatively impact your team, regardless of what he is as a player and regardless of how many goals he can score for you. Does that offset what you could potentially bring into your dressing room? What I'm getting at here is, how do they even move him at this point?
I think the other thing that comes as part of that too, Jeff, is how is he going to react to the situation? You know, as we're sitting here right now, are they going to stay together? And if it does stay together or it doesn't, how does he react to either situation? So now, you know, you've got to play. And again, this is from a purely hockey point of view. There's a there's a personal and emotional side to this too, but from a purely hockey point of view, you've got a guy here who's in a public situation with someone he obviously cares about, and that's going to affect the relationship one way or the other. And then when that affects the relationship, how is that going to affect the player and the person mm-hmm. for the next team? There's so much going on here now. It is an extremely difficult transaction to make.
When you look at the situation with these two players, again, just to your point, from a hockey point of view, these are two players who are expecting the Ottawa Senators, regardless of, you know, even if this specific situation hadn't have happened, I don't think anybody expected these two players to be members of the Ottawa Senators next year.
Well, I have some disagreement with that. And the reason I disagree is I think they wanted to see if they could keep Hoffman for Duchene. And I do think they wanted to take a run at signing Carlson. Now, I don't necessarily believe that was going to work. It's possible, but I don't know. I think there was a possibility one or both could be back. Now, I really believe, Jeff, Ottawa should tear it down now. I think they should trade everybody and start over.
Okay, let's rewind then.
Yeah.
But let's get to that point because, you know, this isn't just one situation with the Ottawa Senators. You know, we go back to them being one shot away from going to the Stanley Cup final. They beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in that overtime last year. You know, since then, it's been, you know, negative story after negative story after negative story after negative story, whether it's the owner, whether it's trades blowing up, whether it's now this situation. It's almost as if it's like taking a drink out of a fire hose. You never get a chance to actually get a sip in. You just keep getting speed bagged with all these stories if you're the Ottawa Senators. It is relentless.
And is there more?
Don't know.
Yeah, I think you just wonder, like, what else is there that we don't know about? Now, the other thing that makes this a problem is that Ottawa really tried to trade Hoffman in the last couple of days before this got out. They must have known it was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny. Like, I had a buddy of mine who said to me that, how come a sports reporter didn't get this one? And I think there was some knowledge of it. Like, there were rumors of it out there. There was some kind of a problem. But unless you're a court reporter, and it was a crime reporter who broke this, and all the credit to her, this isn't jealousy in any particular way, unless you're going through the court documents, you probably don't find it. And you can't do this one without proof or somebody admits it to you.
Right.
And nobody was going to admit it unless you stuck the proof there. But the thing is that the Senators had to know this story was coming out. And they tried to trade him, and they dropped the price. And now other teams are looking at that like, that's a bit of dirty poker.
Did anybody wonder why the price was dropping?
Absolutely, they wondered why.
My first question, if I'm another general manager, is, whoa, how come all of a sudden everything must go?
And I think it was even wilder than they imagined. Because if you make this deal without knowing it, and I think there might be some teams mad at the agents too,
mm-hmm.
but the agents are protecting their clients and Dorian's trying to protect his investment. Whatever the case is, I think there were some teams just mad at the overall situation that, oh, you tried to pull a fast one on us, eh?
Right.
So what else about some of your guys are you not telling us?
And you wonder how
it's a brutal situation.
So you're of the mind then you tear the whole thing down.
I think this
is scorched earth. And does that even go as far as the pick this year?
Well, I would give the pick to Colorado this year.
And just done with the trade? Just wash your hands?
I would wash my hands
done.
And say, because first of all, if you do strip it down, you're going to have a terrible team next year.
And you're shooting for Jack
Hughes.
You have
a better pick. You know, with the lottery, you can't really shoot for anyone, but you're going for the best possible pick, right? But the thing is, I just wouldn't want it hanging over me anymore. I would just say, you know what? We're saying that all this was done, and we're not doing it anymore, and we're moving on. Now, Dorian just got a contract extension, and Boucher's got one more year, and that's not Eugene Melnyk's way to clean house and pay people not to work.
Right.
But, you know, the one thing I'm thinking right now is just like maybe from your roster, if you're not going to do that from your roster, start it all over. I'm saying, okay, what can I get for Hoffman? What can I get for Carlson? What can I get for Mark Stone? And I'll worry about how to get to the salary floor later on.
So the only
calling Chicago, and I'm saying, what will you do for me if I'm taking Marian Hossa's contract?
Right. But that doesn't extend to the Shabbats. That doesn't extend.
No, you know, you're keeping – I'm okay. Not trading draft picks.
Right.
I'm keeping all my
except
draft picks.
Except this year's, giving it to Colorado.
Yeah, I'm giving up this year, but I'm not trading the rest of them. You can't have a draft pick of mine. But I will talk picks and prospects. I'm putting everybody out there.
Does any of this matter as long as Eugene Melnyk is the owner of the team? Here's why I frame it this way. I know this is a tricky conversation to have, but if you're the Ottawa Senators right now, it's not just about the players on the roster, but it's about, you know, what happened to Tom Anselmi? What happened to, you know, people that need to fill your front office in order to have a vibrant and robust team? That just doesn't happen if you got a couple of guys hanging around the office hanging paper on the wall.
Well, the other thing too is, could this have been dealt with better?
What specifically? Like the Hoffman-Carlson situation?
Thing.
Or like, all of it?
All of it.
Well, that goes right up to the top. That's my point.
Like, I'm agreeing with you.
You can trade as many players as you want. If everything above the player level remains the same, aren't you just spinning wheels?
You know, it's like, look, we just had a situation in Toronto where 3 years ago the organization was going sideways. And Lou Lamoriello came in, and I know there's a lot of people who don't like Lou Lamoriello. They think that his style of thinking doesn't work anymore. It's not for the new way. But he stabilized that organization. Regardless of what you think about him, that team is going in the right direction, and it's calm. That's what Ottawa needs. They need someone to go in there now and say, no more BS. And you're right. If the owner's not going to be better, it's not going to matter. And I am sure that at the league level, they're looking at this going, you know, what else?
What can they do, though, at the league level?
The problem is that this is the thing from the league level is, what do they care about the most? It's franchise values. What the league can do is they got to find a way to get a deal done with that arena.
Mm-hmm.
LeBreton Flats. Get that done, and then you could sell the team for what the team deserves to be sold at. At the NHL level, that's what I'd be doing. I would say, Eugene, you own the team. We're getting the deal done now.
With that, we welcome you to the 31 Thoughts podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
Let me tell you a story about Elliot Friedman. This is about, I don't know, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, when I was just starting out here on a full-time basis and I was doing some primetime sports. And something happened. We were supposed to have Elliot on, and Elliot wouldn't come on. And Ryan Walsh, who was the producer then, said to me, "Well, you know that Elliot doesn't like you." And I laughed. I thought, that's funny. Week went by, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, no Elliot Friedman. Friedman wasn't going to come on. And I'm like, God, maybe this is true. And I was racking my brain because Elliot's such a great guy. And I mean, I was always a fan of his. And I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell did I do that would make Elliot Friedman hate me? And I'm a pretty cynical guy. I don't get the wool pulled over my eyes. But basically, bottom line is, I spent, without a word of a lie, 8 months thinking that Elliot Friedman hated me. And it was only when I got the traditional Elliot Friedman Happy New Year's message on text, I thought, that's great. Elliot Friedman doesn't hate me. And, you know, one of the things I love about Jeff Merrick when we get him on the Jeff Blair Show, one of the best things about Merrick is we play music when guys come in. Derek Brandale's got great taste in music. He's our producer. Merrick comes on, and he can riff on any, I mean, it doesn't matter, the most obscure Canadian song. And Merrick will come on and riff. And that, plus the fact that the guy has the best set of tattoos of anybody in this building, that's why I'm a big Jeff Merrick fan.
Because I know music and I have ink. It's not that difficult to impress Jeff Blair. But thank you for that, Mr. Blair. By the way,
I only hate Ryan Walsh. I don't hate Jeff.
I was going to say, how come you dog-faced him for 8 months?
I don't know what happened there.
Put up the stop sign in front of Blair. He is part of a brand new podcast called The Lead. It is Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt, who, if you've heard them on radio together, are fantastic. And the podcast is Same. So check that one out as part of the SportsNet catalog of podcasts, the outstanding combination of Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt, as our podcast army continues to grow here. around these parts. Emil Delage, are you producing all of these podcasts, Emil? Is that true? Yeah. Just want to bobblehead that one, are you? So you if see, we add like four or five more, we're just never going to see you again.
See, this is the thing. Like, Rogers was smart. They gave Emil a job. And they said, oh, congratulations, Emil. You're hired. You're doing a couple of podcasts. And now they're going to start the adding. Oh, you're our podcast guy. Well, now we've got six more.
Yep.
So your fee per podcast is really dropping, just so you know.
Are you getting flat for all of this, or are you getting per pod? All of a sudden, you know what? All the nice production values we get here on 31. Yeah, all of a sudden you're going to start to drop. All the audio drops we get in there. We're just going, oh, you know what, guy? I think we just go raw with
this one.
Just the audio.
I was going to play a couple clips, but I just think it sounds better without it.
Got a meeting with Blair and Brunt, you know, went a little long. We're just going to put it out there. I think people will appreciate it.
Blair and Brunt have long meetings. Those guys are really particular.
Thanks to Jeff Blair for the intro. Okay, so
at least Shulman's podcast takes no effort whatsoever.
Is that true? Is that anywhere close to true? Not even close. All right. So I mentioned Ottawa off the top. We're going to be joined by Sam Cosentino, who's our lead analyst for the CHL on sports, and also the NHL draft, which is upcoming. So look forward to that conversation. But this is the first time you and I have had a chance to talk about the Capitals, the Knights,
yes,
the Stanley Cup final.
All we need is a puck drop and release the hounds. Eller for the draw. And as the puck drops, the words that D.C. fans have been waiting to hear since 1974, the Washington Capitals are the 2018 Stanley Cup champions.
And it seems as if the headlines around the Stanley Cup final, the games itself and the awarding of the Stanley Cup, has been completely dwarfed by this nonstop party, this nonstop conga line that's been led by Alex Ovechkin, which just doesn't seem to want to stop, to which Elliot Friedman says,
keep going. Like, what am I going to do to stop it? Like, I think it's outstanding. I don't get the criticism. Like, I really don't. Like, the fun police make me crazy. I hope that everybody has something in their life that means that much to them that when you accomplish it, you are allowed to let it go with such unbridled joy. I don't know who wrote the article, but somebody sent me a note about how it was a bad example about binge drinking. And I'm like, where are we going here? Mm-hmm. Like, to me, when you achieve something that you have spent your entire life trying to achieve, and how many of painful defeats did all those guys suffer on the way to getting there? You know, some more than others. You did it. Like, enjoy it. Like, love it. Like, that's not binge drinking. Binge drinking is something if you're doing it all the time and you've got a problem. That to me is a celebration of an accomplishment that is really hard to do, that some guys have dedicated their entire lives to doing. I don't understand all of the hand-wringing. Life is hard, Jeff. You know it. Life is hard. Celebrate your achievements. And if you really achieve something big like that, really celebrate it.
Celebrate in the way that works for you.
Yes.
That wouldn't work for me.
Yes.
So here's the interesting thing about it. This is years and years of frustration.
Absolutely.
That has been built up for Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah.
This is years and years of frustration. I mean, how many times have we seen Alex Ovechkin do that end of the series locker room interview, which begins and ends with, Alex, what happened this year? Yeah. As he tries to figure out what type of answer he can come up with.
Or at the Olympics.
All of it.
Yes.
Finally. Mm-hmm. You know, that criticism. I can only imagine what goes through his mind. Like that moment where, you know, it's 0.6 seconds and the faceoff's in the zone and it's over and he comes off the bench. All of that's gone now. He doesn't have to do that interview. He doesn't have to answer those same questions all over again. I can only imagine.
He never has to answer them again.
No, done. That line of criticism is
over.
Over.
O-V-A-H.
Done. You can't win with Alex Ovechkin. He's selfish. He'll never change. That's not how you win cups with, you know, you win cups with Steve Yzerman. You win cups with Sidney Crosby. You don't win cups with Alex Ovechkin. Uh-uh.
No.
That's done.
You know,
that's all over with. So
and Barry Trotz.
Barry had the same thing.
Brian McLellan, he's been with the organization for 20 years.
Yeah. Good on them, man.
You know what, Jeff?
What's up?
I'll tell you, the other thing I like about that is, too, and this is going to set the standard for everywhere now, you have to celebrate it with the people.
But that's what they did. Like, right away, they've gone to the people with this thing.
Like, if you win a Stanley Cup in Canada now, you have to do that. You have to take it out to the people.
Yeah.
If you win a Stanley Cup, I mean, anywhere, really. But, you know, the one thing about Washington is people forget, like, that's a 44-year-old market. Like, there's really hardcore hockey fans there. I told the story on the radio this week. When I worked at CBC, Joel Darling, who was just over here a few minutes ago, like, I never worried about how many hits my blogs were getting and stuff like that. It's not a thing I really worry about. But he came over to me and said it was the day after Alexander Ovechkin got suspended for hitting Brian Campbell from behind. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a blog and I said, he's going to have to change the way he plays because he can't keep getting suspended. And Joel actually walked over to me and says, you know that blog you wrote today? And I go, yeah. He goes, it got like hits off the chart. And I go, really? Like that? He says, yeah. Like compared to the stuff you normally write, it was off the chart.
Hmm.
And I made a mistake of going and looking and reading at the comments. And it was people who were Capitals fans killing me for suggesting that Ovechkin had to change. So that's a fan base that is A, protective of their player, and B, they care about their hockey. And I love that they said to them, we're going to celebrate it with you so you can all see it. That's going to set the standard now.
How much did Ovechkin change the story around him and the way people feel about him? And I'll give you just one. This is very non-scientific, just one first-person experience. A buddy of mine who's a huge Penguins fan.
Okay.
And he's the Penguins fan that because he's a Penguins fan, he hates the Capitals.
Yes.
And hates Alex Ovechkin.
Yes.
And we're at my son's lacrosse game yesterday, and he was there because his kid plays with mine. And he said, you know what? I've always hated the Capitals, and I've always hated Ovechkin, and now I can't. I love him.
Yeah, it changed a lot this year. You know, and the other thing that people forget, Jeff, is that when he started, he was the darling. Like
big time.
He beat Crosby
that first year.
He scored
the Phoenix goal around his Palmer. Oh, yeah.
He beat Crosby for Rookie of the Year. You know, he even though English was not his first language, he tried to do interviews and stuff. I think there's a lot of different opinions on where it changed. But you know where I think where it started to change back? Like, when they lost in Russia and they lost to Pittsburgh last year, I think people started to look at them like, man, that's tough. That's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. And then when they beat Pittsburgh this year, and he played great. And I'll tell you, this, even though he didn't score his most goals, this might have been his best season. From the moment he came out and he said, we're not going to suck this year.
Can it be a good thing when there's fewer outside expectations on a team?
I think we have a still good team, you know. We're not going to suck this year, you know. We're going to be fine, and we still have a core group of guys who've been last year. We have two.
Like, I forgot he said that, actually.
Yep.
And
that's what everyone's saying, because they were built to crescendo last year.
But even they said that. And he comes and says, we're not going to suck. And he played great. He had a really good year. And they win the division. And when nobody's expecting them to win the division, I think people just looked at him. Finally, Pittsburgh, people just looked at him and said, you know what? This guy's gone through enough garbage. He deserves it. I think there's a lot of people who felt that way. And you know what? I kind of hope that Pittsburgh is there for the home opener next year when they put up the banner.
That's a great one. That's a great idea. Steve Hatzepetros, the schedule comes out
in
2 weeks.
I think it's next Thursday before the draft.
That's right. Yeah.
I think it should 21st. Be Pittsburgh at Washington to put up that banner.
Joe Thornton, Roberto Luongo,
Henrik
Lundqvist.
Lundqvist.
Nash,
yeah.
Claude Giroux.
Drew's
getting into that conversation.
I think it's got to be.
Who are the guys now?
I think Thornton and Lundqvist have to be at the top
of the guys that haven't won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
That you're waiting for their rebirth moment.
And you know what, Luongo too. Like, you know what, Luongo right there. You know what? I keep forgetting. I keep thinking he looks younger. So sometimes I forget that he's older. Those three guys are probably the guys.
There's a few guys who have retired and moved on and never ended up winning the Stanley Cup, and the Sedins just called it a career, whether it's Shane Doan or Jerome McGinley. Like, there's still some guys that from that last generation, many came close and never got it. And I would imagine that if you're Alex Ovechkin, you're saying to yourself, am I going to be one of those guys? You know, am I going to go through my entire career here without ever winning a Stanley Cup and be talked about in the way that – you know, players like Marcel Dion or Gilbert Perreault, you know, and do you want to be part of the conversation of who was the greatest player to never win the Stanley Cup?
No, nobody likes that.
Never want to be part of that conversation.
You know, how much – I'm sorry, Emil. How much basketball do you watch?
I watch more now because my kids love Golden State.
Okay, so I watch the TNT show, and I don't like it when Shaquille O'Neal rips Barkley for never winning. I love that show.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a great show. But that's the one thing that makes me uncomfortable. I don't like that as a viewer because Barkley is a phenomenal player. And is it his fault that he didn't win?
You tell me. I mean, you're the
best. He was a hell of a player. He lost to people like in the playoffs every year. He was losing to guys like Elijah Wan, Michael Jordan, the one year he got to the final. When he was a Sixer, they were losing to Larry Bird all the time and then the Pistons.
But that's part of like why I don't like the conversation around, well, he can't get in the Hall of Fame. He never won the Stanley
Cup.
Well,
I disagree with
that. How many cups did he win?
No, like I disagree Lindros, with
the
Lindros, that.
The Lindros
and basketball is more of a one-man game or a one-player game can be than the NHL is. But I do say, like, I watch O'Neal and Barkley. That makes me crazy. I don't like that. Like, it's bigger than one player. It always is. And, you know, Backstrom, too. Like, Backstrom's kind of gotten lost in all this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that guy winning and getting hurt and overcoming it, I like Backstrom a lot. I've always liked talking to him, too.
Still like, an underrated guy. Guys. Like, yeah. You look at his draft, and then Phil Kessel's in that draft, and Jonathan Toews, and Jordan Staal's in that draft. If you look at that entire draft, he leads the draft class in points.
Yeah, that's right.
He's got everybody beat in that draft class. And we always think, oh, yeah, Mike, he's one of, like those left behind guys from that draft. Oh, sure, he's good, and we'll put him in the sulky conversation, but all those players in that draft year, he's number one in points. He's a real nice player. Real nice player there. Barry Trotz.
First of all, how can you not be ecstatic for Barry Trotz? I'm really interested in this. Like, there's another guy, 20 years. You know, he hadn't gotten out of the second round,
yeah,
and now he wins. And it's funny, someone said to me they didn't like all his talk about if we don't win, it doesn't define me. His position was in the playoffs, you don't talk like that. No, now it defines you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was a tremendous bit of almost reverse psychology.
Hmm.
I think it was like, guys, we are who we are, and whether we win or lose, it's not going to change it. Now, it's not true because obviously these guys have won and they've all changed for the better.
Yeah.
And they're all ecstatic and their legacies are different. But there's a skill in convincing people that it's true. And does it help lighten the pressure? I think it lightened the pressure on him, at least for sure.
Very true.
Because this was not an easy year for him.
Not at all. And you can remember the John Tortorella handshake. You can remember the conversations all year where, okay, here's Barry Trotz without the contract, and it becomes obvious that when this season is done, Barry Trotz will be looking for work elsewhere. Everything's changed now. Everything's changed for Barry Trotz in Washington. Everything's changed for Barry Trotz in his tax bracket.
Yep.
I would assume.
Well, he's at 1.5 reportedly. I did the numbers, and from what I can tell, because nobody says for sure, that's lower than every active coach who's on a contract, who's won a Stanley Cup.
Randy Carlyle?
Randy Carlyle's a little higher than 1.5. I think he's just under 2. Now, he's just under 2, I believe, and Tortorella and Laviolette are in the mid-2s. Dan Bylsma is still under contract. He's at 3. I think Mike Sullivan is just under 3. Daryl Sutter's last deal was 3.5. Claude Julien's 5. Babcock and Quenneville are 6. So at the minimum, he's doubling it, Trotz.
Oh, I was going to say 5.
Well, you know
for
what?
Barry Trotz.
I don't know if they'll go to 5. Maybe he can get it, but I don't know. I bet you Washington is probably going to go between 3 and 4, I bet.
How does Washington not come back with Barry Trotz, though? 44 years, haven't won a Stanley Cup. Here's a guy. The players love him.
Yeah, as you've heard, you know what? In last year, like, it was ugly. Like, a lot of those guys turned on each other, including the coach. The Washington Post did a great story on this year. To me, the bigger story is last summer, like how they got all these guys back on the same rowboat and pulling in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
That Post story was really good, though. But I think there's more. There's a couple issues here. Number one, what are they going to pay him? Number two, Lane Lambert is assistant coach and close friend,
yep,
a great guy, does not have a contract yet. I think he's going to want Lane Lambert taken care of at a good number two and term. And the other issue there is the Todd Reirden issue. And, you know, last year they didn't let Todd Reirden interview, I believe, in Arizona and Florida and I think Buffalo. And it strained the relationship between Trotz and Reirden. It really did. And I'm curious to see, do they feel that they can work together? Todd Reirden is a Bowling Green guy with Brian McClellan. And I think the other thing, too, is if you read Michael Kempney's quotes the other day,
yeah.
Kempney really credited Reirden with putting his game back together. As a matter of fact, one of the stories I was told at the Cup Final, and I didn't remember it until I saw that quote, was that when they were thinking of trading for Kempney, they gave Reirden 8 of his games to watch and said, watch every shift from all these games and tell us what you think. And from what I heard, Reirden was very positive about it. But the thing is, so obviously they work well together, and I'm sure the organization will want them to work well together. I just think this year has put a strain on the relationship between the two of them.
What happens to John Carlson now? I mean, we've talked about how with the cap going up.
I admire his honesty.
That could be well, he said.
Everything's going great. Oh, I want to come back.
I'd like to be here, but, you know, there's other stuff we got to worry about, namely my decimal points.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, good for him for the honesty because he's on a pretty team-friendly contract right now. That last year, 3.9 times 6. Was it 3.9?
Yeah,
for
something
him?
Like that.
Times 6 years. I mean, that's a real team-friendly contract when you consider what John Carlson has meant to the squad. Does he return? And if so, what do you suspect the ticket is there? And I'm guessing it's going to be 8 years.
Well,
on
you got to think it's about, you know, where Ekman-Larsson
so
is.
So 8.
Right? Ekman-Larsson's 8 times 8, 2.5. And a no-move clause and yeah. everything there. So it's going to be in that area. I really think that that's kind of where they're going to be. You know, the interesting thing is, and Nick mentioned it at the Cup Final, I think Vegas is going to be in this.
In this for Carlson?
Well, in this for...
For two Carlsons,
well,
really.
Well, one of the two, right? Like, or someone. Like, if you look at it now, OEL's off the market. I think most people are expecting Doughty to re-sign L.A. There's not a lot out there for game-changing D. You know, you're a year away from Jake Gardner. You're a year away from those other players. Like, Carlson's the guy right now.
All right. On that, we'll step away and hit pause here on the podcast. Important messages on the horizon. And then on the other side, Sam Cosentino as we preview the 2018 NHL Draft. We'll be right back. The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade. Elliot, now pleased to be joined by Sam Cosentino, whose business card continues to get lengthier and lengthier. Lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. You can watch him, of course, and hear him at the MasterCard Memorial Cup, the Top Prospects game, and lead draft analyst for the past how many years now on Sportsnet, Sam Cosentino?
Yeah, 4. And if we date back to when the Evil Empire had the rights, it was a year that we kind of did a tryout. We were stuck up in a booth there.
That was you and me in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Aaron Ekblad draft.
Up in the booth. That's right.
Yep, so that was a good time. See, Aaron Ekblad draft.
Kind of a tryout for us at that point. And then this will be year 4 of us having.
Yes.
So year 4 for me.
We refer to them not as the Evil Empire, but the Inferior Telecom.
Oh, the Inferior Telecom.
Nice.
Okay, before
very
corporate
we get,
of you, Friedrich.
Let's not put our hand on the stove here. Let's move our hand off and talk about the draft this year. How would you characterize this year's draft? I mean, this isn't McDavid, this isn't, you know, Matthews, but how would you characterize this year?
I think the top two guys are pretty much etched in stone. Dahlin, I think, is going to be a number one defenseman for a long time, which is rare to find. We always have this conversation about how many true number one defensemen are there in the National Hockey League. So let's say I give you 12. I think Dahlin's going to be that guy. So that's a pretty neat thing to be able to have come out of this draft. But I would classify it as 2008.2.
Because of all the defensemen.
Because of all the defensemen. So you go back to 2008, and let's think about who came out of that draft. Drew Doughty, true number one defenseman. Alex Pietrangelo, true number one defenseman. Erik Karlsson, true number one defenseman. And then some of the other guys, you've got Jake Gardner, you've got John Karlsson, who's about to get paid.
Bogosian.
Bogosian, you know, you got a whole host of guys, Luke Shen. And running the numbers on it, there were two guys in that group that didn't play. Colton Tubert played 24 games in the NHL. Tyler Kuma was selected by Minnesota at 20. He played one game in the NHL. The rest of that group has 489 NHL games played or more. So you think about what determines or what defines a career. A lot of times the analytics guys are saying 200 games because that's when your pension kicks in. So now you're looking at this crop of 10.
Yeah.
They'll all get over the 500 mark early next season. But that's how I define it. You look at the number of defensemen taken. I think there'd be 12 to 15 in the first round this year. There were 12 taken that year. You look at the number of right shot defensemen who are impact guys, all at the top. I think you're going to see similar situation here with the number of right shot defensemen. So all in all, I look at this as 2008 2.0.
You know, here's the thing. Something you said there really resonated with me. And I was talking with a GM about it, and they said, look, should 200 games be our definition of success? If you draft a guy in the first round and he plays 200 games, but he turns out to be a third-pairing defenseman or a bottom six forward, should that count as a successful draft pick?
And that's the thing. So I think a determinant for a lot of the analytics guys, they just say, okay, that's when your pension kicks in. So that would technically determine a career in a broad, you know, in a broad brush stroke, I guess.
I think to further that point, should your first rounder be either a top six forward or a first pairing?
For me,
D.
Top four D, top six. Absolutely guaranteed your first rounder should be that.
That's got to happen.
Yes.
That's got to be your guy. So
yeah.
You know what, Sam?
I would agree with you. I think you should have a high standard for your first round pick. I agree with that.
And it's not so you're going to draft a guy that you love, so your due diligence should be done there. But the work isn't done there.
Mm-hmm.
The work's done with what you do with the player afterwards. So let's think about some of the guys that are, you know, let's call them first round busts or whatever else. Well, that was a lot more common, let's say, 7, 8, 10 years ago, because we didn't see in the National Hockey League the same type of player development that we're seeing now. And the attention to detail that once a player is drafted, they get coddled, they get taken care of. There's video conferencing, there's text messages, all of these things. I mean, guys are traveling to junior cities, and that's where I have most of my experience, and running practices with kids and getting ice time.
Yep.
And the coaches in those junior programs love it because essentially they're saying the same thing. They're getting a different voice. They're getting someone who's relevant to the game. Stacey Roost, great example in Tampa Bay. You know, you look at Sean Horkoff, Dan Cleary for Detroit. Those guys are coming in there and working with the players. We didn't have that 8, 10 years ago in the game. And now it's essential. So now that you're putting resources into the player development part of it, yeah, you're darn right. You better do your due diligence on the draft. But it's not done there. Some kids need more work than others to get there. And that's why I truly believe your first round pick should be a top six forward, should be a top four D, and should play as a regular on your club within 3 years.
I got no problem with that.
I have no. I don't think anyone has any problem with that. But then sometimes I think you can run into a situation where you're drafting low. Let's say you're 29th and someone who's not a top six guy isn't there. We've seen teams do this. After a couple of rounds, each scout gets a passion pick. Make your case, and this is your pick. Do you know any teams that do that late in the first? Like, and the reason I asked that is a couple of years ago, the Buffalo draft, it was Boston took Trent Frederick.
Yeah.
And there was some, why are they taking Trent Frederick? There was some, you know, intel out there that Anaheim would take Trent Frederick. They ended up taking Sam Steele with the 30th pick, and Boston ended up with Trent Frederick. And everyone looked and said, well, why are you taking your third line, which is a projected third line player? Said, well, you want the player, you jump up and you take him, regardless of what the position is. Do you know any teams that do passion picks or passion plays or fit for position in the first round?
Fit for position sometimes. In
terms Vancouver did with Ualevi.
Jim Benning was open all year long. We're taking a defensive. We need to address this. We're taking
saying the same thing this year?
Vancouver?
He's been on record as saying that
for
this year as well. But in terms of passion pick first round, no. But in terms of drafting by position in the first round, if your guy's not there, then I think that's something that you address. And you kind of keep in mind that's, you know, D, center, winger, goalie is at least the way I would classify it in terms of priority. But the problem with that is if you're looking at a passion pick in the first round, what are you saying about your head scout? That you can't find a guy at 26, 27, 28? You're darn right you better be able to find a guy. You have budgets to go across the world. You better find somebody at that spot. And if my head scout isn't finding that guy there, he's not going to be around working for me very long.
But if it's a difference between a player who projects as a third line player, let's just take forwards for example. If you have a player that projects as a third line forward versus someone that has the potential, this is all just based on how he's going to develop and how he's going to grow, it's more of a risky pick. Which way do you see more teams siding?
Yeah.
Take the gamble or take the guy you know is going to get in the NHL? Because a lot of teams, and Toronto was guilty of this for the longest time with their draft picks, just take the safe play, the guy that's going to get into the NHL, play a handful of games just so you can say as a scout, my guy made it to the
Frederick
NHL.
Frederick Oche?
Is the perfect example of that.
Yeah, there were so many good things going on about that kid at the time he played in Rimouski. Yeah. Size, ability to win faceoffs, can kill penalties. But for me, I looked at that pick and I said, you know what? The ceiling on this guy is a third line. I don't want my first round pick to have a ceiling as a third line guy.
That's what they came in swinging with William Nylander the next time.
Yeah, so I'd be a little bit more risk taking in my ventures than to pick a safe third line guy. I strongly believe, and that would be my edict if I were the general manager, you better find me a guy in the first round that can play in your top six or in your top four.
All right, so let's go through it. One, Dahlin.
Yep.
I'm really smart there, right? Like, that shows my hockey genius. So, two, Carolina keeps the picks, Svechnikov?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So, we're two picks in. What does Montreal do?
Yeah, that's the circus. That's where the draft starts for me. So, I think they've already investigated several trade-back opportunities.
Yeah.
It's probably cooled just a little bit because I think it's pretty well out there that they want Kotkaniemi as the center. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people out there that have him as the consensus number one center in this draft. So, how far back would you be able to go to still get him? For me, maybe two spots. He's going in the top 10 regardless.
So, that's the Arizona position.
That's the Arizona position. So, from there, for me, that's where the draft starts. And you know what's going to be crazy? Because if they step up and they take Kotkaniemi there, there's a couple of things. First of all, I look at Mark Bergevin and I say, you know what? You better get a guy who can play right now because I think the clock's ticking. And Elliot, you would probably have more insight on that than I would. I mean, this is a five-year plan that's taken a lot longer to kind of generate. And
well, it started off they were a contender and then they fell off. So it's actually been kind of a, you know, people forget for the 2 years there, he could do no wrong. And it changed with the PK trade. Like, that changed everything. But first 2 years, they were in the playoffs. And people, he got a six-year extension or a five-year extension, whatever it was. And Mark Bergevin couldn't do anything wrong. And then he traded PK, and the thing went off the rails.
There's that element. So, in my opinion, I think they need a guy who can play right away. Mm-hmm. So, for me, that guy's Tkachuk. Because he can go in there and play, probably, you know, create some offense for you. But his abilities allow him to play further in the lineup.
More so than Zadina.
I think so. I mean, Zadina's going to score for you. There's no question about that.
I mean, like playing in the NHL next year.
Next year. I still think Tkachuk is the guy that's more safe to spend the full year in the NHL than Zadina. Zadina scores. If you can't score, if you can't get in your top six and score, Zadina's still serviceable enough, but I don't think he does enough of the other things well enough to be able to maintain a spot in your top nine. I think Tkachuk does that.
Okay.
And so, again, getting back to Bergevin, okay, so let's say you take, for example, Noah Dobson. Well, he's probably not going to play for you for 2 years. You take Kotkaniemi, in terms of his skating and being physically mature, he's probably just a shade behind, so I don't think he plays for you next year. But that's the first thing. I think they need a guy who can come in and play right away. The next thing is, if he's taken there, what does that do to Tkachuk? What does that do to Zadina? So you're looking at Ottawa's situation.
Now, hold on. Before we get to Ottawa's situation, I want to ask you something, because there are guys who say that Bergevin has done a really nice job, because the leaks got out about Kotkaniemi, and then Bergevin has done a pretty nice job of trying to convince people that maybe he's going with a D, and maybe he's going with Tkachuk.
Yes.
Okay, there's one GM out there who believes he's going to take Tkachuk.
Yeah.
I've had other GMs tell me he's taken a D, and I've had other GMs tell me you go with the first thing you hear, and that's Kotkaniemi.
Yeah.
So he's got people scrambling a bit, which is what he wants to do.
And I think he's done a marvelous job of that, because for me, the way I look at it is, if you're really confident in your long-term viability with the organization, I take Noah Dobson there. He's not going to play for you next year, the year upcoming, but in 2 and maybe 3 years from now, he's going to be the anchor on your blue line that you just haven't had and haven't had in a long time over there. And I think about Sergachev, okay? When they selected him, why did they take him where they took him? Because they saw a huge ceiling with this guy. Mm-hmm. There were so many things that he did well. And I think he surprised a lot of people with, you know, how well he played in Tampa this year. But I think Dobson's that same sort of guy, that 2 years after his draft, he comes in there and he can start to play significant minutes. And once you get into years 3, 4, and 5, you're going to see a guy who's probably a number one or two defenseman. So if you're very confident in your long-term viability with the organization, for me, that's the pick that you go to.
So if Montreal ends up hanging on to that pick,
yes,
who do is they there take? Any way that Kotkaniemi is this year's, and you were on this one, and you were the only one that I know that called it, this year's Pierre-Luc Dubois?
Yeah, I think so, because that year, you remember, was Matthews and Laine. They both came in and they both lit it up. And Pierre-Luc Dubois saying, wow, what a terrible pick. You know. And then you look at what Puljujarvi's done, and I think Pierre-Luc Dubois has passed Puljujarvi, and Puljujarvi was the expected number three there.
I put Dubois on my Calder ballot. I thought really deserved to be there. It was a tough vote this year.
What he did for
center, I thought he absolutely deserved to be on the ballot.
And that's the thing. There was a bit of risk-taking there because, you know, towards the last half of the year in Cape Breton and then going into Blainville, he started to play center. And that's, I think, ultimately what enticed.
Had never played there before, Columbus, by the way.
Never played there before.
His entire life, he'd always been a winger.
How hard is it to get that guy, that number one or number two center? That's a hard thing to get. So if you go back to Kotkaniemi and then they take him there, yeah, I think he has the potential because he's probably not going to impact your team right away, like a Matthews, like a Laine, like a Svechnikov, like a Dahlin. But 2 and 3 years down the road, I think you're going to see a pretty good player.
Okay, so let's go to Ottawa. And, you know, Jeff and I have talked about Ottawa earlier in the podcast. My feeling is that everything going the way it's going right now, Ottawa should give the pick to Colorado.
Wow.
Because I think what they should do, and we talked about this in the segment before you got here, is I think Ottawa should strip it all down and have nothing hanging over them. Well, that's what I would do with the information we have today.
Yes.
I'm selling everybody off. Whatever happens next year, I'm restarting, and I'm saying I don't want this Colorado thing hanging over me.
In the middle of a rebuild.
And also, especially since it could be the number one pick, I would rather give up the number four pick than be what I think we're going to be next year and
potentially
give up,
give up
Jack Hughes or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell me what you think in terms of what you think is going to happen there if they give it up or they keep it. But if I was Ottawa, I'd give up the pick.
Yeah, I'd keep it.
You would, eh? You're wrong. Get out.
I think there are 30 thoughts now. There's one gone.
There's one. I only need 29 more.
I think there's too good a player to get there. So let's think about, again, the long-term viability of where Ottawa is. Mm-hmm. Carlson and Hoffman, one or both move. Noah Dobson fills... Listen, he's no Carlson. I'm not going to go out and... But I think he's a top-pairing defenseman 3 years down the road. Mm-hmm. Philip Zadina does a lot of the same things Hoffman does, but pays a lot more attention to the other two areas on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't want to talk about a direct replacement of that player, but you're getting a player who I think 3 and 4 years down the road are of similar ilk to the two guys that you may have to get rid of both of them or at least one of them. So my guess is if they address one of those two things on draft day, they fill that hole with one of those players. For example, if Carlson moves, then I think they step in and take Dobson. And, for example, if Hoffman moves, I think they step in and take Zadina there.
Who's the most curious pick for you in the top 10? Of the potential, I mean, maybe Kotkaniemi is the obvious one. But outside of him, who is the one guy that really piques your curiosity and teams may look at, oh, I love the skill. Maybe you look at someone like Quinn Hughes or Adam Boqvist and say, yeah, I love him, but... In my top 10, I want someone that does something else.
Quinn Hughes is that guy for me. I really, really like him as a player. What disappointed me about him was he goes to play in the Worlds and he comes back and he doesn't participate in any of the testing at the Combine. That really stuck in my craw and that bothered a lot of teams. Because I look at Noah Dobson, who had just finished a couple of days earlier, flew back to Bathurst, then came back the time zone and went to Buffalo and competed in all the testing.
Teams have done that. I mean, London Knights, when they won in Red Deer, they came back and none of the Knights kids did the testing.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of that. And, okay, so he's going to go in the top 10. Who really cares? But the one thing that's really important about that testing is we've come such a long way in the predisposition to injury that I would have liked to have seen him take those tests because it gives you a lot clearer picture that if there was, and I'm not saying there is at all, but if there was something there, it could significantly affect where he goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the fact that you're a competitor. That's what you do. Competing and participating in these types of events, it's competition.
It's funny, too, because when we had Rasmus, we talked to Rasmus Dahlin, at the combine, what's the first question? Why are you here?
Why are you doing this?
It's not going to affect your draft one bit. Why are you here?
Yeah. You know what? I like the competitive nature.
So do I. Sammy and I were talking about it. We love it. But
I would be wired to go and show what I can do.
Yes.
I would. Now, I understand it in the past. That has hurt people. Sam Bennett, I remember, had some issues there. And Jason Spezza wrote him a great note about how it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think wasn't Brandon Gormley another guy who dropped because he couldn't do something very well? But I would not be afraid. Now, let's go through the rest of the top 10. Oh, Arizona, what do you think?
Arizona, I would say defenseman. I think they're pretty happy with their forward core. So, again, it's not drafting by need. But if I look at the wingers and the defensemen that will be available at 5, you know, you're going to lean towards defensemen. So you're going to get the best defenseman available. I think they
always go heavy OHL, too, by the way. Yeah. They've been traditionally,
a heavy OHL draft.
Good point.
Tim Bernhardt, that's all his fault.
Jeff Toohey as well.
Jeff Toohey, that's right. Okay, Detroit, I assume they're going D at 6.
It's a fascinating situation there because who was the head coach for the U.S. at the Worlds?
Yeah, and he had Quinn Hughes, and I heard he liked him.
So there's going to be a lot.
Michigan, so.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of conversation that goes on there about Hughes at that spot.
Okay.
So let's just assume, for me, probably a little aggressive for Hughes at 6. But when you have a coach who's been spent, you know, a month with a guy, he knows him. And let's not forget, where did he play? University of Michigan. Where did he play before that? Plymouth at the program. So Detroit would have a more intimate knowledge of this player than they would have probably any other player available in this draft class.
Vancouver 7. Now, first of all, you think they're keeping the pick, boys?
Yeah, it's funny. I think I've pretty much all of outside of Buffalo and maybe Carolina, I think every pick in the top 10 is in play. I don't think anyone's married. I don't get the feeling that anyone's married to their position.
Okay.
At all. I really don't.
Yeah, it probably depends a little bit on how the board goes, but I could see an Evan Bouchard being available to them there, and I think that would be a great pick for Vancouver in that spot. Now, you remember Olevi, you know, he's hurt now.
Yep.
He's going through some stuff and whatever else. But you have to be pretty excited about the forward core that's coming for them with Dahlin and Patterson, even though he's banged up, I think, a little bit right now, but should be ready to go for camp. Gaudette looks like he's going to be a serviceable guy. You know, you've got Horvat there, Besser there. So you got to be pretty happy with that core. But you have to address the back end a little bit there. And if Evan Bouchard's there, he's a perfect fit, in my opinion, for Vancouver.
If Evan Bouchard's not there, and it's looking like, okay, the next guy on the board, take your pick, Ty Smith or Adam Boqvist.
Yeah. Well, Boqvist, I think they have, a lot of success, you know, with
high skill,
with Swedish players.
Yeah.
High skill
Swedish players, they don't need to have buddies around them or whatever else, but I do think it makes them feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you would get a lot of intimate knowledge from the Pettersons and from some of those other guys, the Dolans, about what Boqvist would be able to bring to the table if there's any personality, character issues there. And it's not that they don't do their due diligence on that. Vancouver is one team that really likes to, you know, to dig in on what's happening in terms of the background information. So would he be an option there? Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to get out of the lane there.
All right, 8, 9, 10, Chicago, Rangers, Edmonton.
When are you going to say Oliver Wallstrom?
Yep, Chicago at 8.
Chicago,
yep. I think that's, you know, they've had a lot of
They like
history.
Their skilled forwards.
They like their skilled forwards, and they have history of drafting American players.
Throw another sniper into the mix to complement Alex DeBrincat. Throw another guy who is a 40-plus goal scorer.
Yeah, well, they're almost kind of a similar guy, aren't they?
I do want to start a new rule, though, that if you're an American player, you shouldn't sound Swedish.
Yeah, he's got a bit
That's
of that.
Too confusing.
Yeah. Blame Dad. Blame Dad on that one. Blame Dad on that one.
It's too confusing. Okay.
Rangers and Oilers.
Rangers and Oilers.
Yeah, the Rangers are a really fascinating team because of their three picks. So do they take, you know, what is it, 26 and 28, and do they move up with that pick? I think that's a real possibility so that they can target two guys, kind of like they did last year. But they got it going on. They went for a long time without a first-round pick. And then, you know, with the deal with Stepan last year, they were able to acquire two first-rounders and two guys that they really like. Hedl started with them, obviously, and I think he's going to be a big part of the picture moving forward. Elias Andersson, once he gets healthy, is also a guy that can probably step in and play for you in a third line, a bottom six role, I guess, if you will.
Zibanejad, Andersson, Hedl. That looks pretty nice down the middle for the future.
Yeah, that's by all accounts, that's the style of game that David Quinn wants to play. You know, puck possession, new style.
Yeah.
You have some skilled guys that can really do that. You know, I really like Andersson. I think he's going to be I thought it was a bit of a stretch where he was taken, but I like him in terms of, you know, the long term for him there. So getting back to where they are, I think Boqvist would be a guy who would kind of fit in with their with their program there if he hasn't been taken earlier.
And Edmonton's going to look for a D, you think?
Yeah, I think they have to too. But at that point,
D as in defenseman or D as in deal?
Both.
Yeah, I know you guys have been hearing a lot about that. What, in terms of moving down?
In terms of moving down, moving that pick, getting it, helping to get a player. They're not in the business of green bananas right now.
Yeah, well,
they need to win.
And there's some, there's a lot of teams that'd be itching to get into that first round. There's no question about that. But let's just assume they keep the pick. They go defenseman. I think Ty Smith is probably the guy there. Barrett Hayton might be a consideration as a centerman there as well, if that's something that they feel that they need to address.
All right, before we get on to some sleepers and stuff, these are for both of you because I know you guys know the middle of the round pretty well. There's two other Canadian teams that have first-round picks, Ottawa at 22, Toronto at 25.
Yeah.
Any intel on what you think those two teams are thinking or what you think is going to be something interesting around there?
I wonder, and maybe this is just...
And we know that in Toronto, the history for Dubas when he ran the one draft is, if you can, trade down, add more picks.
More picks. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up going that route again. And maybe this is just me in love with the local boy story, but I wonder if Ottawa gets to that second pick and Sarah Noel of the Oshawa Generals is available. Yeah. I wonder if they go that route, if he's still on the board then.
Is he still on the board? That would be a big question for me if he's still on the board. I think he goes a bit earlier than that, but there's a lot of interesting players that are going to be available, I think, in that neighborhood. Rasmus Kupari would be one of them at 22. Keandre Miller, defenseman, I think is probably risen up a little higher than people might expect.
You throw Matias Samuelson in that mix?
Samuelson, for me, a bit lower. I think that would be a little bit aggressive at 22. Isaac Lundestrom, centerman, really all-around guy. Remember
the poor man's Patrice Bergeron?
And there's been a lot of success for Ottawa and Sweden as well, so they would have some very good intelligence about the Swedish players. Martin Kaut would be an interesting guy.
Yep.
Absolutely fascinating story that he had to leave the combine. He's undergone a condition for his heart. How he recovers from that, by all accounts, it's a fully 100% recoverable issue. But he'd be a guy that probably just because of that, even though it's curable, maybe he slips into that spot. And I think he's a player at 22 that you get really good value at because I think he's probably someone who deserves to be in the top 15.
And same with Toronto.
Yeah.
Any idea of what they prefer?
See,
I think they would prefer a defenseman, to be honest. And you know what? And maybe this is, and again, this is some symmetry with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, but I wonder if Rasmus Sandin is available there, if that's where the Maple Leafs lean.
Ooh.
And for the second year in a row, they grab a Swedish defenseman.
He's probably in that range, Sandin. I mean, I didn't like his game in the finals against Hamilton. He looked tired. He looked
Connor Timmins goes out, and he's logging heavy minutes Sue during that win streak without, Connor Timmins. That's a lot of Rasmus Sandin this year.
That's it. So, and then the other part to go along with Sandin, he's played for 100 teams in the last couple of years. Has he decided to go back?
That's an interesting point.
Has he decided to go back to Sweden? I'm hearing rumors that he's going back to Sweden next year and not going back to Sault Ste. Marie. So there's a lot of those things to consider that if, for example, someone takes him, Toronto takes him at 25, is there going to be a contractual issue that's going to get in the way of him coming over and playing right away? And
now with him,
Kyle
though,
Dubas, Sault Ste. Marie, would he want him to go back to junior for another year? Would he want him he can't put him in the American Hockey League.
Well, hang on. Isn't he on loan? Because if he's on loan, then he can go to the American Hockey League.
That's right. Is he on loan? I don't know if he's on loan. That's a great question. That's something we're going to have to...
You guys chat. I will see if I can get an answer.
You'll find out if he's on loan.
For some reason, I want to say that he was... Because to your point, he's played in the past few years for a whole lot of teams. Mm-hmm. Like even at the beginning of this year, he started in the SHL. And then after, was it 5 or 6 games... into the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds of the OHL. And it's like, okay, well, there's another team that Rasmus Sandin has played on. Which is interesting, too, because normally flags go up when you see that. But then when you talk to his teammates and you realize how much players gravitate to this guy, normally that's like, okay, this guy's a problem, this guy's an issue, and he's a loner. But it's not as if he doesn't have a great personality that the players gravitate to.
But
he does.
You're right. So let's consider... I'm sitting in Sweden and bouncing around teams. I'm not getting any ice.
He is on loan. The Swedish team Rogel still holds his contract for 18-19.
Okay. So he can go into the American League.
He can go to the AHL. Okay, so that was quick for each.
Well, you know what?
Pretty good network.
I'm good at Googling.
Journalist. Pretty good network, eh?
Yeah. My network is the internet.
Rogers 5G.
Sportsnet Internet. Yeah, Rogers 5G.
But
Ignite.
you're sitting there. You want to play with your brother at home. You bounce around a few teams.
Yeah.
How about the number one team in the CHL calls you, offers you roughly 25 minutes a night and a chance to win a championship? I think I could get along with a lot of people if I were put in that situation too. And that's not to say he's a malcontent. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying if it were a situation where he was running into Sudbury, would he be that quick to bite? And the other takeaways that I got from the combine were, I think there were some teams concerned about his shape, whether he's a guy who's going to work at improving, you know, nutrition, yeah, away from the rink, body workouts, all that kind of stuff. I talked to a couple of teams that were very specifically concerned about that.
Look tired at the end of the year, to your point. The only thing that I've, this is obvious to anyone that watches him, he's not the most fleet of foot defender. Like, he's not a burner.
Yeah, at his best, though, he's pretty fun to watch. But he got a couple of their small defensemen, Hollowell, Sault Ste. Marie, they got absolutely pounded by Hamilton. They're dumping pucks in corners and running those guys left, right, and center. And ultimately, that was a big part of their downfall, Sault Ste. Marie's downfall, because they weren't able to handle,
mm-hmm,
you know, the big heavy forecheck in that series with Hamilton to decide the OHL championship.
You know, one of the interesting things about this year's draft, and this may play well for someone like Ryan Merkley, so a couple of different teams that have multiple picks.
Yeah.
And if you only have one pick in the first round, you might be shy about taking someone who is, when you look at the offensive skill set, it's elite. It's fantastic. There are other things that come along with Ryan Merkley you might not like. But I look at a team like the New York Rangers, who have the three. You look at the Islanders, although that's pretty high for someone like Ryan Merkley, but they have a pair. Like, there are teams that have a couple of picks in the first round. Philadelphia Flyers, another team that have two, mm-hmm, first-round picks, going back to the Braden Schenn deal. Does the fact that there are teams with multiple picks help someone like Ryan Merkley get into the first round?
It's the only way
you
goes in the
you
first
can,
round.
You can take your lock and your guy and then swing for the fence with your second, and in the Rangers' case, your third pick, yeah, in the first round.
It's the only way he goes in the first round, a team with multiple picks.
What do you think of Merkley?
He's an unbelievably talented young man. There's too much other stuff that I have to worry about. So Anthony DeAngelo comes to mind. How many teams has he played for in the NHL?
He's been around.
Okay. Josh Hosang comes to mind. That'll probably get cleaned up by Lou pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to last. And is Lou Lamoriello, like, at New York? I don't think it's a possibility there. The Rangers, to me, would be the highest percentage team to take him with that very last pick, 29th, that they have of their three in the first round. Other than that, I do not see Ryan Merkley going to a team that has one single pick in the first round. So if it's one of those, what is it, six teams that I think have multiples in the first? Got Ottawa, Philly, New York.
Rangers, Islanders, both
Rangers,
of them.
Rangers, Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Yeah.
I think there's six teams with multiple firsts.
Detroit.
Chicago.
Detroit with a pair. Pick up Thomas on the Thomas Tatar deal, so they got two.
So it would have to be one of those teams, but there are at least a couple of those teams that I've talked to that have put him on a no-draft list.
Yeah, there was one team that I talked to halfway through the season.
How many players
year?
Are on a no-draft list this year?
Great question.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Sam. Yeah, I know. I'm not wildly familiar once we get past kind of the third round
guys. I understand
guys.
That, yeah.
So there's probably some guys that sit in that area that are do not draft, but I'd say there's probably, well, it's interesting you say that, Friedge, because you know what? There are a lot of teams that still have a bias against Russian players.
Yeah.
So would a Russian player be on a no draft list? I think it happened to Nikita Papageyev last year. So I still think
what
that bias.
What percentage of the
exists.
League would you think would have a no Russian draft list?
I think it's low. I think it's low.
I would say 20%.
So six teams, you'd say,
yes,
probably.
Yeah. I'd say four to seven teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
I only know of one for sure.
Yeah.
That's not a chance.
Yep.
No way, no how. No matter where we are, and if we're in a position to take one, we're getting out of that position.
Yes.
We're moving it.
Yeah.
If Rasmus Dahlin were available in last year's draft, where would he go?
Ooh,
Nico Hischier, Nolan Patrick.
Okay, so yeah, both guys are centermen, so you're not going to win out on a positional bias situation there.
Miro Heiskanen third to Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's every bit as good as what Heiskanen is going to be. And you know what? You know, with all the stuff that went on with Nolan Patrick last year, he might have slipped in ahead of Patrick,
mm-hmm,
maybe, at two. He'd be a top three, four guy for me for sure. It's like Jack Hughes. If you were in this year's draft, where do you think he'd go?
One, maybe.
Oh, over yeah. Dahlin, eh?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, like if the other thing too is I wonder, like, American player, American city, you know, you guys know, like, we're all Golden Horseshoe guys.
Yeah.
Like, we all know Buffalo.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good hockey market.
Yeah.
And their fans have been kicked in the head. Like, if you knew you had Hughes and Eichel, what would that do to your market?
Well, but then Eichel and Mittelstadt up the gut.
You know what? Maybe you might take, I mean, but you'd have to think about it, wouldn't you?
Oh,
of course
yeah.
you would, for sure, all day.
And, you know, there's a lot of familiarity. You know, the Hughes lived in the Toronto area for a long time, so they wouldn't be out of reach.
Okay, let's get more ahead of ourselves. Alexis Lafreniere.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, so let me ask both of you guys. This is my last question for both of you guys. You guys are both draft guys. Who is the Jeff Merrick / Sam Cosentino? I'm betting my kid's education that this guy who nobody knows is going to be a player.
Ooh.
That nobody knows.
Well, that nobody listening to this podcast knows, like me. Like I'm not a draft guy like you guys are. So a guy that is not on my radar, who you guys are going to say someone's getting a steal with this guy.
Alvin Erickson is someone that.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Alvin.
Alvin Erickson. You know, was pretty much. He's a Swedish player. Most teams by now had a good second half of his year, specifically competing internationally. Good size, started to turn everyone's head in the second half of the season, and by the end of it had snuck into most teams' second round. And there's a couple of teams, one specifically, that have him between the 16 to 25 range. Now, that team isn't drafting in that spot, so it's easy to say, oh, yeah, we've got him between 16 and 25, knowing that, you know, you're talking from the back seat and you don't have a hand on the wheel. But I wonder if Alvin Erickson could be that one that everyone says, ooh, they really got a steal there if indeed he ends up being a second rounder.
You?
Kevin Ball is a big defenseman who plays in Ottawa, whose offensive numbers are almost embarrassing to say that he might end up going in the first round. I don't think he quite gets there, but he goes in the top half of the second, I believe. But he's like a 6'6 guy, 220 pounds.
Nasty edge too, hey, Sam?
Yeah, he's kind of got that old school bite to him. But kind of the intriguing thing for me about him is that in every big event, whether it's the Ivan Linka, the under-18s, he played in the Canada-Russia series this year in November. He found a way to score. He has got two regular season goals in the last 2 years, and he's a dash probably 45 or something like that. But he's played on, you know, he's always been a top matchup guy for Ottawa. Ottawa's a team that by next year they'll start to make some noise in the Ontario Hockey League. But because of his size, he moves well. Laterally, he's got some things to work on, but a straight line speed forward and backwards is good enough to play right now. And he's one of those guys that, for me, he's not a first round because I don't think he's a top four guy, but he's in the early part of the second round. I think he's a guy who's going to play. Like, he's really confident. He knows what he is. He knows what is going to make him play at the next level. And I love guys who have that self-recognition at such a young age. So he'd be a guy that probably is in, you know, whatever, the 40th pick that I think ends up playing, maybe playing earlier than most people would expect.
You know what? Another player, just hearing you talk about Kevin Ball like that, another player that comes to my mind, and the regular season was good, but he didn't have, you know, complimentary players around to jack his stats. But every time he competes on a big stage, whether it's Hlinka, whether it's top prospects, whether it's U18, is Tytel Andrea Flint.
Yep.
That might be another one. I know when you look at sentiment, you mentioned, you know, Kotkaniemi and Joe Valeno and Barrett Hayton, go right down that list. But I wonder if Tytel Andrea is one of those guys that slips into the first round. When you look at the fact that when he plays with complementary players at his skill set, he excels. And even in Flint, in a team that, you know, got rid of, you know, tons of players as they continue to restructure the team, still produced at almost a point per game.
All kinds of character. For me, he goes in the first.
Yeah.
He probably goes in that. He's going to be right in Toronto's range and all the way back to 31. But I'm going to give you one more guy.
All right.
Sean Durzi plays for the Owen Sound.
You've talked about him forever.
Yes. Yeah. Love this guy.
Yeah.
So he's been dealing with some upper ankle issues the last year and a half. But when he's on his game, this guy motors. He's an excellent skater. He's the new age guy through and through. He was kind of under the radar because of injuries. And you know, again, in that Canada-Russia series, he just played in one game there, but he was absolutely brilliant, and he proved he could play with the big guys. So he was so motivated by not getting drafted last year as a re-entry this year. He worked his tail off when he was healthy, and he's a guy for me who gets into the second round who I really think is going to play because he fits right into the style of game that, that people are playing now.
Okay, well, my last question. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you got one more?
I got one last one for Sammy.
Okay, I was going to say, just to the listeners, if none of those kids pound out, you get Merrick and Cosentino's Children's College Education Fund.
And you can reach me through Merrick's Twitter account.
That's
right. You can send your letters to 1234 Shangri-La Lane, courtesy of T. Uth Ferry. Adam Mascarin re-enters the draft.
Yeah.
What round?
He's a fascinating guy.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, Mascarin, that's
Florida
right.
Florida pick, didn't sign. He's back in there. It happens every year, but he's the most high-profile guy.
So the guy that I can think of most recently would be Connor Bleakley, who in 2015 was taken 23rd overall Colorado.
Remember what they did with him, too? Like, when they made the when they made that trade for Bodker, Arizona included that pick. Colorado included that pick, so Arizona would get a second rounder next year if they renounced the rights to him. That was a tough one for that kid, I bet.
Yeah, it was a tough one. And it was a brilliant move in terms of
No,
Arizona.
But like that tough for that kid to be included like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Of course, knowing what was going to happen. But he got redrafted by St. Louis. I think he went in the fourth. I think Mascarin's probably a third round guy.
You think that high?
Yep. There's a good track record there, right? He scores.
He does.
There's a good track record there. So, and you've got that one extra year where this year was a pretty good year, you know, and of course you're going to get bias from the coach, but his coach, Jay McKee in Kitchener said, you know, he's really started to pay attention to some other areas of the game. But this all kind of started with Mike Van Ryan. You know, when he coached in Kitchener, he took this kid after the year and said, okay, you're a great player in minor midget. You're putting up numbers here in the OHL, but what you're doing is not going to make you a pro. Come work with me for a little while. I'm going to turn you into a pro. I'm going to show you how pros work. So he spent some time with him. Was it two summers ago? And what was the end result? Where did he get taken? The second round, I think it was by Florida.
Florida Panthers, yeah.
So then they decided not to sign him. That's fine. But he got a real good taste of what it's going to take here moving forward to make it to the next level. So he's a smallish guy as a forward, skates okay, and shoots at a ton. So he's going to score goals for you. I think for me, he's a third round guy.
All right. Free agent, anything? Last chance till we get to Dallas for Sam.
What do you think of Hudson Elnick, Pat Elnick's kid?
Yeah.
I did a little bit of work in him. Someone told me, because I knew that Carolina had offered to trade him, so I knew a little bit about him.
It's funny, because he kind of plays the game as a forward, like you would say a defenseman in the rocking chair. Is really kind of, there's a lot of, I don't want to say like conserving energy, nonchalant, but he's kind of easy peasy about his game.
Yeah.
But he has a really good ability to score goals. Teammates like him. Coaches don't necessarily like him. He's a really interesting guy. Do I think he can play at the next level? I think more dedication on his part is required for him to play at the next level.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Beauty. All right, Sammy, you're the best. Get lost.
Get out
see you in Dallas.
Disagreeing with me on Ottawa.
Thanks for spending a lot of time today with us, Sammy.
Love it.
Appreciate
guys.
It. Thanks,
love
pal.
It. Thanks.
Tired of subscribing to multiple streaming services to get your sports fix? Introducing Sportsnet Now. Stream everything Sportsnet TV broadcasts and more on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones, tablets, Xbox, Chromecast, and the Apple TV app. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. It's free for Sportsnet TV subscribers. Get the best bang for your buck with a Sportsnet streaming subscription that gets you the most content. Visit snnow.ca for more details. All right, Freach, we'll finish up as we normally do here on the podcast with some hashtag Ask31s. The first one, here's an interesting one. This one comes from Tanya Rezek, good friend of the podcast. Is it possible to be a professional athlete and maintain a vegan diet?
Yes.
Chara does. Ryan O'Reilly does. Mike Zygomanis.
And it's big in the NBA now, too. Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've made so many advancements in what we understand about player health and nourishment and sports science and things like that. yes, you can do it. As a matter of fact, the old chicken and yep. pasta days, they're over. It's a very, very different world now.
Andreas Athanasiou.
Yes, I believe. Well. And who else? Who's the other? Justin.
Applicator?
Yeah, he went. He says it's tough to give up the ice cream. To which I told him
There's non-dairy ice cream.
I told him about vegan.
That's the last night, as a matter of fact.
Vegan Ben and Jerry's. He looked like I just discovered cold fusion. He said he's pretty close, but he said Athanasiou was hardcore.
He is, eh?
Yes.
All right, from Paul Campbell, our good friend from In Goal Magazine. Which team is Erik Karlsson most likely to be on July 2nd?
Hey.
Doesn't this sound like a draft deal?
It does.
Feels that way.
Paul, I got to tell you, I think there's going to be some surprise teams that come in here. I don't know if Vegas will do it. I just don't know if they'll do it.
Because they don't want to let go of
Cody Glass. They only have one pick in the first three rounds this year.
So they don't have a first round pick this year. That went for Thomas Tatar.
Yeah, they don't have a third rounder this year.
Give away one of the three from last year. So Nick Suzuki and Eric Brandstrom will be
They have two. More next year, but I'm not convinced Vegas is going to do it now.
You know what? That leads to an even bigger question. They didn't perform like a traditional expansion team, but now, after the first season, do they go back to behaving like a traditional expansion team? Or do they say, hey, we're close here, boys?
I think they're going to take some swings, no question about it. I'll tell you this. Like, teams that were in it at the deadline, like, I wonder, does Nashville take a big swing here again? They were in it. Does San Jose revisit it? They're going to have a lot of cap room, particularly if they don't get Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling.
Dallas?
Yeah, you know, Dallas would be an interesting one, too. The one thing I'll say, Paul, is I think there's going to be a team or two here that comes up that we've kind of forgotten about or slipped from the radar.
All right. From Tony Vandenhoevel, will the CHL ever implement an opt-in rule for CHL drafts? If committed to NCAA, you're not eligible to be picked. When you want to enter the CHL, you have to go through waivers.
You know, the one thing I do believe is at some point, it might be a CBA issue, they are going to get to that draft proposal that was out there a couple years ago, the 19-year-old draft.
Oh, it's for NHL. I think you're talking about CHL.
Yeah, but that will affect the way everything gets done.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. So you're looking at a first round is when you can select 18-year-olds.
Yes.
After that, it becomes
all 19-year-old
draft.
What I think they will try to do is they will try to create a situation where you can go to the CHL, and after you're done from the CHL, you can go to the NCAA if you want.
Well, that would be fantastic.
I believe
all of hockey.
Like, I was told that, yes, the NHLPA objected, but not for the reasons that I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Is because the Player Association wants something. If we're going to agree to this.
Yeah, give me a cookie.
Give me a cookie. But I heard they weren't against it on the merits of the whole thing. So I am very curious to see if, as part of the next CBA,
yeah.
a new 19-year-old draft and what that will mean for the USHL, the CHL, the NCAA, and the lower junior leagues in Canada, like the tier A leagues, what that's all
going to
mean.
So a lot of players are going to USHL, keep their college eligibility open. A lot of your more Europeans now.
Yes, that's happening.
Are doing more. That.
Yeah.
We saw that, you know, well, Elie Tolvanen, although he didn't academically qualify. I mean, there's a number of players, European and North American as well, that go the USHL route because they're not playing against players that have pro contracts. As for the CHL part of this question, this comes on the heels of Cole Perfetti decommitting from Michigan and going to the Saginaw Spirit. There's one general manager in the OHL who proposed this. Two drafts.
Okay.
Two OHL drafts.
Okay.
One for players who opt in to the OHL and two for players that have committed to NCAA. The thinking being, you can't throw other teams off by saying, don't draft my guy, he's committed to college. You go into the I've committed to college draft, which is a second draft.
Yep.
And then the first draft is for kids to say, if you draft me, I'm coming to the OHL. One general manager has proposed that.
I don't think that's – like, the thing to me is that the NCAA and the CHL system, they're going to change eventually. The status quo could not stay. It's going to come down to – do they find a solution or do they get it handed to them by a court case?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to stay. I don't believe you can expect the next 10 to 15 years things that we, as the way we see them now, are going to be the same.
From Rianne Schaefer. Ryan? Maybe Ryan. R-I-A-N. Ryan. Do you see the NHL expanding to 34 teams? Houston is a huge market. Quebec, question mark. Where does it end? 36 thoughts?
God, I hope not. You know,
Quebec seems like the relocation market more so than an expansion.
You know, the one thing is, Scott Radley, the Hamilton Spectator, got a comment from the family that we talked about that was trying to bring a team to Ontario. This is purely me talking. But what if Gary Bettman's last thing before he retires as commissioner
is a billion-dollar check?
Is a billion-dollar check for another team in southwestern Ontario.
Drop mic, check me out on Facebook.
Yep.
I mean, right now, when you look at what Gary Bettman's doing is, you know, he's writing the legacy position. What am I doing? What is my legacy going to be in this game? Whether it's, you know, all the CBAs and the markets that have, new markets that have come in, you know, leave the game as a multi-billion dollar business as opposed to what it was when he took over in 1993. That would be like closing with Freebird, is what that would be. That would be like closing with Hotel California. That's what that is. Saving your biggest hit single right for the very end, and handing over a $1 billion check.
Yeah. And I will say, like, Scott Bradley from The Spectator did get confirmation from the family that they were interested.
That's a big move at the end of the career. Oh, speaking of which, you know what I always thought would be a great move for a player? I know a lot of players listen to this podcast. So if you're a player, if you retire, when you retire, if you end up doing it by your own choice and deciding that this is my final...
By the way,
family's
name is Paletta. I realize I didn't say what it was.
Okay. If you're a player that's wrapping up his career in the NHL and you are a significant player, because you need some gravity to make this profound, and they do this in weightlifting. I would love to see it happen in hockey. Elliot, how much of a baller move would it be? The visual would be great. Imagine if Gretzky did this. If... after you've played your final game, okay? So the Sedins could have done this just most recently. You know, Trevor Linden could have done this. He played his final game against Calgary with Vancouver. End of the game, you know, you do the handshake line. Everyone shakes your hand to respect and all that. Skate to center ice. Take off your skates. Leave them at center ice and walk off.
Unlike Sean Avery, who threw him off the bridge somewhere.
Yeah. This the visual of those skates at center ice, to me, is fantastic. Now, it's completely borrowed from weightlifting. I get that. You're done competing. You take your shoes off and you leave them and you walk off. But as far as a visual for hockey, I just thought that would look so fantastic. Watching him take off the skates, walk off, standing ovation, skates at center ice.
I'm trying to decide, like... who I could see doing this. Kevin Bieksa, Scott Hartnell.
Yeah.
I'm out there for different. And I wrote this last week. I'm hoping we're seeing the dawn of a new era in the NHL.
Yeah.
Where the personality is coming out. Whoever does it, I salute them. I'll give them the slow clap.
The Weiser's clap?
Yeah.
The slow one. That would have been a great one for Gretzky to do. You know, the greatest of all time.
Wasn't his way. But...
right.
Like, you know, I could see a guy like Hartnell doing that.
Here's one you've talked about plenty from Mark Blanchard. With puck tracking technology on the horizon, how far out are we from using that technology to determine if a puck crosses the goal line or not?
You know, I'll tell you this. I have been told they are working on something, but they won't tell me what it is.
With that type of technology.
It's different from the stuff that they did with the IIHF, because the IIHF of the World Champions had some really interesting puck tracking stuff with cameras. I've told it's not the typical puck tracking thing that we're talking about. Like, I think the NHL is trying to do a camera-based system, because I think the league's position is, as long as they don't put a chip on the player, they can do it without the player's permission.
Without the NHLPA signing off.
And they've been a little bit obstinate about it, each other.
They did this with the pucks of the World Cup, didn't they?
Yeah, but that was...
and the players were like, oh, I didn't even notice a difference.
Yeah, but I have asked the league about it. I believe they're doing something with it. They're doing some testing, but I don't think they're close yet. They're working on it, though. I believe they are working on it.
From Daniel Soter, when do you think Houston will get an NHL team Will it be expansion or relocation? What are your thoughts on Houston getting an NHL squad? Hashtag Ask31 from Daniel.
I think it's more of a relocation now than an expansion. I think there's some question as to how much Fertitta really wants to own the team, or does he want it to be a tenant? So I think that Houston's going to be one of those in the back pocket for a little while.
Okay, so the next time we do a podcast will be after the first round of the NHL draft.
Yes, next Friday. I'm excited about this.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
No, this will cut into my post-round one drinking time.
Apologies, but your liver thanks me.
Yes.
And we'll thank Emil as well. So the next time we'll convene is when we're in Dallas, and the first round will be done. How active, by way of trades, do you expect that first round
It'll
to be?
It'll be busy.
Not just of teams moving down and moving up and moving position. Oh, team trades, you know, 13 and 18 exchange for pick number 8. Like, nothing like that. But as far as actual player movement.
I think it'll be busy. Like now the draft is the time where you reset, right?
Yeah.
So I think it'll be busy. I do.
We've talked about Montreal being the busiest team and maybe the most interesting team come draft day. Does that change now, given the Ottawa situation? Is Ottawa now the most interesting team to follow on draft day?
I think
given the decisions
Ottawa,
they have to make?
Montreal, Toronto. I'm curious to see what Dubas is going to do. Islanders, because they got the Tavares thing hanging over them.
And they got two picks back-to-back. Rangers have 3 picks in the first
round. Rangers have 3 picks in the first round.
Could they be swinging for John Tavares as well?
The other guy I wonder about is Tampa.
For the draft or
just,
for things outside
general,
of the draft?
Just in general.
What's happening with the organization?
Wants right-hand D. Think they've kind of kicked the tires on Kovalchuk a bit. Not happy the way season ended.
Mm-hmm.
He's got big brass ones.
Yzerman.
Yeah.
Just players?
Yeah, I think so.
It's going to be Buffalo's day.
Yeah, oh, Buffalo.
They'll select first
and, you know,
overall.
Buffalo's
and
trying to move O'Reilly. They're trying to get wingers. I would put Buffalo in there, too.
Are they just trying to move O'Reilly, or do you throw Reinhardt into that combination?
I don't know. I'm not so sure about Reinhardt.
Ristolainen into that one as well.
Like, they're looking for a winger, right? Like, they really got to get wingers. Like, I could see them in on a Rick Nash. I could see them in on Pacioretty.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them in on some of the wingers out there. Skinner, although he's winner center. I think Buffalo's going to be interesting, too.
Buffalo's in an interesting spot in that you're starting to see what that next wave is looking like. You have up the gut Jack Eichel, Casey Mittelstadt, Rasmus Dahlin on the back end. Now you're starting to see, you know, unlike, because it was just a couple of years ago, the last version of the rebuild, it seems as if this one is being done with more skill in some ways. The Buffalo Sabres, now, the past few years, to me, have looked like a team that was built for 10, 15 years ago. Big, strong, tough. And hey, listen, that style worked with the Los Angeles Kings, and they won Stanley Cups. But with the movement now to speed and to skill and move the puck and think fast, it seems as if Buffalo is more along that train now than ever before. And I just wonder who the victims are. Like, to me, the interesting story about Buffalo is not who's going to be there more than who's not going to be there. And how do they make that happen? And the goalie situation. Do they bring Leonard back on a one-year deal? They have goalie issues.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think he goes with Ullmark and finds someone else.
See, the last time I was there, it seemed as if they liked... I mean, Ullmark's the goaltender for the future. There's skepticism whether he is ready for a full season's worth of work.
Okay, so set him up for 40 games.
And then who's the other goaltender?
You can find someone.
Philip Grubauer.
No, I think if Grubauer goes somewhere, I bet it's going to be Carolina or
Islanders.
Islanders.
All right, so again, we'll talk to you next Friday here on the podcast from Dallas after the first round is completed, the drafting, the trading, and all the speculation. Thanks to Sam Cosentino for stopping by the podcast today and spending a large amount of time with us. Thank you, Sam. And the outro music this week, Patrick Watson, Step Out for a While, playing Massey Hall on Friday, one of the last shows at Massey before the renovations. Best place I've ever seen a concert. Massey Hall.
Yes.
We were just talking about Arcade Fire before the podcast. Saw them at Massey Hall. Outstanding. Ryan Adams saw there actually a few weeks before Arcade Fire. Some of the best shows. The Gordon Lightfoot shows at Massey are still the best. Still the finest. I know. You know how I know it's the last one? Because I'm going, sucker. Never miss Gordon Lightfoot. Anyway, Patrick Watson takes us out. Step out for a while. We're back in a week. Thanks, guys.
It's right about time. You better pick your boys and try. Take a little walk with me. Take a little break from thinking all the time. Cause I need a fever, darling, to make it on time.